Flint, Michigan. How did a simple flip of a switch lead to a long-term public health crisis that tested the resilience of its residents? In this Science of Crime podcast series, we examine the chain of events that led to years of damage, distrust, and dirty water. My name is Morgan Cheney, and this is episode 11, The Multi-Generational Epigenetic Changes Inflicted by Lead Poisoning. Our bodies have learned to adapt to the changing environment we live in to keep us alive. Our evolutionary traits have been passed down from our ancestors over generations. Genes that cause certain phenotypes like brown hair and blue eyes are able to present themselves in our physical attributes because they are expressed. To understand how lead can cause epigenetic changes, we must first understand how genes are expressed, along with what epigenetics are and how they affect gene expression. Sarah Boylan, a teacher of molecular biology at St. Paul's School in Concord, New Hampshire, is here to tell us a little bit about the basis of epigenetics. I asked her what are epigenetics and if she could give us a broad overview of how they work. She responded.
Yeah, so like epigenetics is defined as above the genome, right? So epi is above. So it's, you know, a lot of times I think people think your skin cells and your blood cells, because they're different types of cells, have different DNA. But in fact, you know, the skin cell doesn't shed its, you know, neuron DNA. It still has all that. All of our cells have all of our DNA, but it essentially epigenetics determines whether it's turned on or off. So yeah, I don't want neuron genes on in my skin cell, like that doesn't do anything for me. That's a waste, or that would end up being like weird cells would emerge out of that, right? So like essentially during differentiation, when cells differentiate from like a stem cell, they get more and more specific, meaning that they lay down more epigenetic tags, which turn off certain genes and turn on other genes. And so that all relates to transcription, right? When, you know, what genes being expressed is whether they're transcribed and therefore translated into protein.
After talking with Sarah Boylan, I realized that transcription has a huge role to play in epigenetics. Your DNA holds your genetic information. It codes for the proteins that not only determine what you look like, but they also keep the processes in your body functioning, among other important cellular responsibilities. Each strand of DNA has four building blocks, also known as nitrogenous bases: adenosine, thymine, cytosine, and guanine. The sequence in which these bases are arranged determines your genes. This is why your DNA is different from everyone else, except for identical twins. So how does your DNA turn into these proteins? It goes through two processes, called transcription and translation. Transcription creates an RNA copy of a segment of DNA, in this case, a specific gene. Then with that RNA, translation decodes the sequence, creating a polypeptide product. Genes are not constantly translated and transcribed, meaning they need to be regulated to produce specific proteins only when the cells need them. Regulatory methods are put into place to prevent overproduction, keeping the organism in homeostasis. We know from Sarah Boylan what epigenetics translates to, but the study of epigenetics examines how your behaviors and environment can cause changes that affect the way your genes work. Unlike genetic changes like mutations, epigenetic changes are reversible and do not change your DNA sequence, but they can change how your body reads a DNA sequence, and that is why translation and transcription are so important. These epigenetic changes affect gene expression to turn genes on and off. It acts similar to a light switch for genes. It is turned on when needed and turned off when it's not. To put this into perspective, we asked Hank Green, a YouTuber who teaches complex STEM topics, to students to help us understand. Can you explain, for example, how these light switches in our bodies affect us as overall humans?
So say you have a clone or a secret identical twin. Because you know that a twin or a clone is a genetically identical person to you, which is crazy. But it's true. Anyway, so you have this clone or your twin or what have you, and your parents decide that it's too much trouble to keep both of you. And so they give your clone to a kind of sketchy traveling circus. Now, I know your parents probably wouldn't actually do this, but just roll with me for a minute. So for the purposes of this example, let's just say that you grew up living a normal suburban American life, while your clone grew up with less stability and less access to nutritious food and less education, but more exercise and more access to sword swallowers and bearded ladies. And let's say you guys are 50 years old or whatever, you get together and have some lunch. So you're sitting there across the table from your clone. What do you think you see? Well, for starters, clone probably has a tattoo on its face. And if clone had stayed in the circus, clone probably, you know, professionally rides a unicycle over a tightrope, so clone is probably in pretty good shape. But then again, clone probably smokes cigarettes and probably was malnourished as a child, so might be slightly shorter than you. By the same token, let's say that you've been eating Sonic Tater Tots 5 days a week since 1992, so you're looking a little bit tubby. Plus, you spent the last 20 years at a really stressful job that puts you at risk for all kinds of weird health complications. So, at 50, you and clone would probably look pretty different from one another. But it turns out, you don't just look different, you actually have become different. Now, if some scientists looked at your genetic code, they would say that your DNA was still exactly the same as that of the person. That is to say, if your genome is a paragraph, all of the letters would be in the exact same order. But on another level, there would be a huge difference. And if we extend this metaphor, we can say that the letters are in the same order, but the spaces and the punctuation are all in different places. Of course, completely, potentially changing the message of that paragraph. The study of this genetic punctuation that I'm talking about is called epigenetics.
So what makes that punctuation so different from person to person? The punctuation marks are actually regulatory tags put in place to either completely shut off that neuron gene in your skin cells, as stated by Sarah Boylan, or temporarily stop production of that gene because there's already enough produced. The regulatory tag most commonly found is a methyl group on cytosine. This occurs when DNA methyltransferase puts a methyl group onto a cytosine, causing the cytosine to become 5-methylcytosine. By putting that additional methyl group onto the nitrogenous base, we see that during transcription, the DNA after the methylated cytosine is unable to be copied into RNA. Therefore, methylation acts as a stop sign. In Flint, the lead levels in the so-called safe drinking water were dangerously high. Lead has been known to cause irreversible damage to our cells and our bodies as a whole. This damage manifests itself in a variety of ways, as previously discussed in the season. During early life, exposure is especially dangerous because of the developing brain. This can cause learning disabilities and mental retardation, among other deficits. When you are an adult, like most of the population in Flint, we see increased susceptibility to adult neurological diseases such as Alzheimer's disease. But awry DNA methylation, caused by overexposure to lead, causes drastic changes. Among the many changes, there are two important ones to know. The hypomethylation, or loss of methyl groups of the COL1A2 promoter, can cause overproduction of collagen in the body, affecting the internal organs and skin elastability. The hypermethylation, or gain of methyl groups, of the P16 gene, a gene responsible for tumor suppression, is also attacked by high levels of lead exposure. Without the proper production of P16 proteins, tumors are able to begin growing unchecked, increasing the possibility of cancers in the residents. While these epigenetic changes are not permanent, meaning there is no change to your DNA, the epigenetic tags are passed to future generations. The experiences you have during your life not only affect you, but also your children and your children's children. Arko Sen, a postdoctoral researcher, conducted a study on pregnant women who had higher than normal blood lead levels and abnormal DNA methylation. His team tested the blood lead levels and analyzed the methylation of the child and saw those methylation tags were passed from mother to offspring. To further test if there were multi-generational impacts, they tested the fetus's germline and revealed that the same methyl tags were present in the germ cells as on the previous two generations. These multi-generational impacts Flint will have to face for the generations to come, even after the water is, in fact, safe for consumption. We can see the effects lead has on many generations, not only by direct exposure, but also through indirect exposure. Lead's lasting effects may prove to be evident once the residents expand their families, even if those generations do not come into direct contact with the same levels of lead. Because of the exposure to lead the city imposed on the residents, the city of Flint may experience catastrophic illnesses that could follow generations of Flint natives. Even though epigenetics are not permanent changes to DNA, they have permanent effects on gene expression, manifesting itself in this generation as well as future generations.